Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 145. I'm Jackson, and today I'm going to talk about how generosity defines the best way to live. I'm also here with Pastor Todd.
Yeah, my name is Todd, and I'm going to talk about how trying to be present where my eyes are at in line means putting my cell phone down and paying attention.
All that and more on this episode of Tangible Takeaways. Hey, welcome to Tangible Takeaways, episode 145, here with Pastor Todd as we get back into our normal rhythm here to start the year.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Boom.
So thanks for being here. And it's been a super fun series that we're jumping into, and is going to be a fun, you know, I don't know how much we've told people about this, but it's going to be fun because we're going to keep picking up this theme of Jesus being right about everything in a couple different areas throughout the year. So I'm really looking forward to not only the great, you know, fruit that this series will produce in us as a church, but then going forward, just keeping Jesus's teachings on some really specific things that are cultural kind of hot topics even before us over the coming year, I think is going to be a really good thing.
Yeah.
But as we're talking about Jesus being right about everything here pertaining to money, specifically, the first, you know, you've alluded in a couple of times throughout the series of kind of a moment where you realized, oh, Jesus is right about everything, and that includes money. And I wanted to talk about kind of what was that moment first for you that you realized, yeah, Jesus is right about this. And then what have been the benefits of then getting your life in line with his teaching? Because as we've said, that doesn't just mean he's like intellectually correct. It's also the best way to live. He holds the keys to human flourishing. So what's been the benefit there for you?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Thanks again for having me on today. Yeah, I think I shared a little bit in the last couple of messages that, you know, I grew up in a home, Joanna grew up in a home where we saw our parents very consistently. Back then it was write that tithe check. That's how we, and that's how as a child even you would know, like today, you grew up in my home, we've done a lot of things electronically, you might not even know what our kind of giving pattern or rhythm is. But we saw that, and so it wasn't that we were unaware. I think what I would even liken it to, I've kind of had opportunities to talk to young adults about this topic before, because it was my experience. It was just, hey, I got a part-time job in high school. Everything I make is either for gas in my tank or to take my girlfriend out on a date. That's what that money was for. And it got spent pretty, there was nothing to save. And I never marked anything aside first to give. And then I get into college and I'm literally just doing jobs on the side to get enough money for gas, take my girlfriend out on a date. So here are my priorities. It was pretty obvious, but it wasn't obviously like buying stuff or saving for something big or just making, it just seemed like making ends meet.
Yeah.
But I think it's then getting that first job where I'm like, now I'm adulting and now I don't have other things to blame things on. I'm just a kid, or I've got a lot of going schedule with classes. I don't have time to maybe get a job and begin earning, you know, money. And I think that the question that I had to come to, it would be in the first 2 or 3 years of our marriage, where we finally began to realize, if we don't do this now, when will we? Because we just kept kicking the can down the road. And I'd say that now to young adults who would think, I have a part-time job, I'm going to school, or it's my very first job and just trying to make ends meet. And it comes back to, we can't think that Jesus was right about everything in terms of not only that he's the owner, but also that we are to use his resources his way. We can't think that there's going to be a golden moment when we've arrived financially, because what's happening is I'm not only building, you know, that kind of a path that I just keep walking, a rut that I keep walking in, that I just don't even think of God when it comes to finances. I think of, how am I going to use this for that? How am I going to pay this off? And it's just completely secularized, even for a believer who would really need to see things again through God's lens. But as we're going through it, we just realized there's never going to be a moment where we go, now it's time to give. We just need to start. And I think we did, even though we had never heard Pastor Tom on the subject, I think we did start with a lesser percentage, but just made that a faithful monthly, you know, offering. And it just began to change our perspective. It began, and this is what we talk so much about, first fruits. That's where it was. It wasn't like, well, what do I have left at the end of the month? I'll never have enough. But it was right at the beginning of the paycheck. That's where that's going to go. And then I'll be able to work out the rest. And man, I'll just tell you, just there's so many stories. The fact of, like, I think of doing seminary when you guys were little and on a very small amount of income as a youth pastor. And the ways that God provided for us were not primarily, I mean, they came through a paycheck, but that was never going to cut it, because also paying for seminary during that time. But the way that God allowed us to rent this little cottage of a house for dirt cheap from very generous people in our church, to people helping pay seminary bills for me. And things like that, that I would have never counted on, or like, oh, I know how this is going to play out. But being able to say, God, we're going to prioritize what you've said. These are your resources you've entrusted to us. And we're just going to watch how you provide in all these other ways that we would have never counted on or expected. And I think that's what that does, because what is God after, right? We've said Jesus is right, not only because he's all wise and authoritative in our lives, but he's all wise, or he's right about everything, because he knows the best.
Yeah.
And he knows the best for us is to stay dependent on him. And actually, what's worse is when we start thinking, well, I can handle it. That golden moment will never come, because as I get older and progress, most of us are able to earn more and take care of other things. And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, I've got it. And I love that verse we shared a couple of weeks ago. You just stare at wealth, it sprouts wings and flies away. I've just had that happen so many times in my life. I'm like, yep, do not think that this is going to be a lasting, you know, thing you can put your trust in. Rightly so. Instead, put your trust in God.
Yeah.
And watch him provide for your needs rather than you think you got it.
Yeah. And it is, it when you put it in the paradigm of Jesus being right about everything, it is that fascinating, like, A, we've got to start at some point. It's always going to hurt. It's kind of like, I feel like people make similar arguments when it comes to getting married or having kids. It's like, there's never a good time to get married. Sure. It's never a good time to have kids. Yeah. There's probably never a good time to start tithing, but you got to start at some point. And then on the other side, though, you do also have to start thinking through, man, I'm missing out. Like, if he's right about everything, then there's something that I'm missing out on by not having this area of my life conform in obedience to him. That flips, I think, our understanding of his teaching and our understanding of biblical teaching on its head a little bit, because we think I'm going to be missing out if I listen, and I'm going to be missing out on enjoyable and good and fun things, and I'm going to be missing out on that extra 10% of my income and all the things I could do with it or whatever. But if he's right about everything, then you're missing out right now in any area that you're not living in obedience to him, be it money or, you know, your sexuality or even forgiveness or things like that. You're missing out right now by not being in conformity to that. And so it really kind of flips the teaching, our view of his teaching on its head a little bit, because it's not this restrictive, no fun for you. It's, man, there's actually something I'm missing out on here. Yeah. And when you talk about people whose hope is in their money, man, you've seen plenty of documentaries about where that goes for people who are uber rich and uber famous and find themselves with nothing and deeply empty. Even if their wealth doesn't fly away immediately, they still find themselves in this deep emptiness, and many of them lose it completely.
Yeah.
And so it's not something enjoyable that you're missing out on. You're actually missing out on what's good by not listening to this teaching.
Yeah.
And there is something interesting with God and first things. I'm thinking about that because as we've been going through the shred, you see a lot of the first fruit kind of imagery keep coming up. God even says, your firstborn sons, they're going to be mine.
They're mine.
And the firstborn of the lambs, they're going to be mine. And when you go into the promised land, the first city, that's going to be mine. And there's something about God wanting first in our lives. And I think we tend to think that God's maybe too much of an extremist and he just wants everything in our lives. God understands there is going to be other things in our lives, right? There's going to be other things on our calendar and things like that. But there is something to be said for the fact that God consistently, in the way he relates to his people, he wants first, because he knows if he's not first, he's last.
Yeah.
And so there's this like really interesting way that that should inform our, if we've decided in our heart, like, hey, I want to follow Christ, I want to prioritize God in my life, then putting him second won't do, and putting him third won't do. And I think we can fall into that trap where it's like, yeah, God's a priority to me, but I also have these couple others that are pretty high, and we get them out of whack. Yeah. And it's like, no, God needs to be first in your money. He needs to be first in your time. He needs to be first in your affections. And there is room for other affections and other places that your money will go and other things in your time, but he needs to be first. Yeah. And that's a pretty followable instruction and desire from God. Whereas we can think, well, he just wants everything. He wants all my money, and he wants all my time, and he wants all my affections. And I don't even know how I could do that, because I've got a wife and I've got kids and I've got a job. And we just start getting super practical with it. And it's like, no, there's space for that. He wants to be first. And if he's not first, it's not acceptable. And that's a fascinating, you know, if we can get our heads and hearts around that, I think that's pretty attainable for us to prioritize him.
Yeah. No, I love the way you said that, because, you know, sometimes we can be so theoretical. I do this a lot in my life, in my walk with the Lord, and I just need to be reminded of practical things. So when I say, there's a great older song, I Surrender All, that is important, right? Yeah. That we do come and say, God, you get to direct it. It's yours, whatever. It is all of yours. But when we say, theoretically, you know, God comes first, it's fascinating that there actually are things we can do that demonstrate that.
Yeah.
Versus the just the nice thing to say, it's what we should all be saying, but don't really land that a lot in our lives. And sometimes it's tested and we have to make that choice, but what a great thing to kind of build into a rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, God gets first.
Yeah.
Related to this, related to his resources, related to my time, which is his time, you know, related to all these things. And I think that's just a really practical way to keep our faith on the ground in terms of real practical, and like I'm living it out versus a lot of theoretical in my head.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Keep reminding ourselves. I think it's the way we remind ourselves everything is his, is by giving him first. Yeah. Right. And now if we kind of switch to Jesus's teaching here that we've been looking at in this really short but powerful passage in the Sermon on the Mount, we get to, as you were talking about, skipping over these couple verses every time you teach on this passage, because generally somebody would just teach on this passage, you know, beginning to end. It's a pretty short passage and you just teach on it all the way through. And I totally relate to what you're saying, because every time I come across these middle verses in Jesus's teaching, I'd be like, that's weird. Anyways, you can't serve God and money.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you just move on to the conclusion.
Yeah, what's the bottom line?
And it's like, wow, this is a really, when you dig into it, this is a really powerful and supportive thing to what he's teaching. And it is deeply connected. It feels like it at first has nothing to do with money. And so it feels out of place. Like, oh, maybe that should have gone in like the lust category, you know, a little bit earlier, or, you know, some of those different things. And so you're like, I'm confused, but it has a ton to do with Jesus's teaching on money. And really specifically to guarding what we look at, that there's this idea that we are affected by the things we give our time and attention to. And so you need to be careful about it.
Yeah.
And I think if you were to start there with just that instruction, that we need to be careful with the things we give our time and attention to because they affect us, that's hard for us to agree to or accept. I remember like growing up as a kid, you being really picky and specific about the music that I would listen to. And that being so frustrating to me, because I was like, I'm not gonna start doing drugs because I'm listening to this song or whatever, you know, like fill in the blank, just because they talk, it's not gonna affect me. Mm. And that I think is how that is the hubris with which we view the things that we intake. We think, well, this show is not going to affect me at all. This movie or music or this conversation I'm having with a coworker or whatever, we think we're just impenetrable to all of these different things. And the Bible teaches a very different story, that we are actually deeply affected and impacted by our environment. And I think we can fall into a huge trap and pit if we don't realize the fact that we're affected by our environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do we begin to understand, maybe I am affected by the things around me and the things that I'm intaking? And then how do we guard ourselves against being affected by those things or even intaking some of those things?
Yeah. So like looking at the verses again, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are good, I'm reading from the older NIV, we read healthy this week, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are bad, if they're unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. So when you think about those concepts, and I think there is this interesting thing, if your eyes, so one of the things I think we struggle with in the Bible is that we will begin to believe that we don't have control or responsibility over certain things, that the Bible gives at other places, not in this passage, but imperative verbs that say you can, you are responsible for this. Mm. So I think it's kind of this whole thing, like we talked about, the disconnect for me was, we're talking about what we treasure, then we quickly go to eyesight. And I'm just like, I didn't see the connection well, but it made so much sense going back and studying. It's like, okay, but my eyes are impacting and thickening my affections, right? It's what I'm looking at and what I'm looking for that begin to develop those and make those all the more significant. And what's fascinating is for a God-honoring way and for a God-repulsing way.
Yeah.
Like it goes both directions. Like we said last week, I would hate for people to walk away thinking God says don't treasure anything. No, don't treasure things of this world that are going to pass and that can be lost and won't last, but do treasure things that have an eternal impact, this eternal value, and will receive reward. Man, go after those.
Yeah.
So we never want to have this kind of passive attitude that it's just all about, well, just kind of go through the day, whatever happens, happens. Like, no, there's purpose. Go after that. And in the same way with our eyes, if I look upon things that are, in this case, we looked at that word, straight, simple, here, good, healthy, all those descriptors. If I will look upon those things, those actually brighten my whole life. My affections are amplified in the right direction. Mm. Consistently to the opposite, if my eyes are unhealthy, if they are, in this case, bad, if they are double visioned, whatever, then I'm actually increasing the darkness in my life. So I think that's the key kind of takeaway, is Jesus is helping us understand your eyes amplify your affections one way or the other.
Yeah.
So again, what are you looking at and what are you looking for? So I just think that basic understanding, it's actually doesn't have imperative verbs. It's not actually giving direction, but it's giving insight.
Hmm.
This is how it works. And then I was thinking about other passages. I will tell people often, 2 Corinthians 10, you know, has this idea of take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. So as I see things and then it translates into what I think about, I tell people, I don't think you can really guard what you like dream about. I don't know if you can guard glancing thoughts that come in your head, but what you stew on, what you marinate on, man, that is very something you have responsibility and control over. So guard against those things. Don't just sit there and let those things marinate that, again, aren't consistent with following Jesus, because those will begin to capture my heart. And then similarly, this passage from Philippians 4, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. I think another way you could say that is look upon these things.
Yeah.
Let those be the things that your eyes fixate on, rather than becoming, again, through this lens, primarily you'd mention this idea of lust of the flesh. It's interesting how those connect to our eyes as well.
Yeah.
But in this case, when it comes to beginning to believe that's what mine is mine, and that these are, I'm an owner, not a manager, I think this concept of then the eyes presents itself, I want that. I need to possess that. That will make me happy, fulfilled, fill in the blank. And it's our eyes, what we're actually feeding through our eyes is, again, amplifying our affections, versus when I'm looking at people, great need for God in their lives, great encouragement from this person who is following Jesus closely. I mean, on the list goes, and that's what ends up at the end of the day lasting, our God and people. So as I'm watching and looking, and what will those do with my eyes as I especially see people's needs, it will create a greater empathy and compassion to be helpful to them with God's resources than to be, oh, that's a bummer. But what was I looking at again? You know, that's what I think the role of the eyes are related to this passage.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking as you were talking about how in Proverbs 4, when it talks about guarding your heart, right? It says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. But then interestingly, it brings up two things that you talked about this weekend, your tongue and your eyes. After that, keep your mouth free of perversity, keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead, fix your gaze directly before you, and then give careful thought to the paths of your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. So it's kind of this, be careful of what you talk about, be careful of what you look at, and be careful of the path that you choose. And it's like those three things are the keys to guarding your heart then.
Yeah, that's the practical outplay of that.
Yeah, and I think the worst thing you can do is A, think that you're invincible, because the things that you talk about, the things that you look at, and the direction you set your life for is ultimately affecting the person that you become. Yeah. And so you are choosing when you talk that way or look at that thing or take that step in that direction, you are choosing the person you ultimately end up becoming. And nobody sets out to be like a terrible person in their 50s, you know, but we see that happen all the time, right? Like we see people as they get further and further into life, they just become worse and worse people, worse and worse versions of themselves. And it's because of small decisions about what you say, about what you look at, or the step you take in a direction in your life. And so to realize, man, those are daily decisions that I'm making about the things that my heart is going to treasure. And again, amplifying really the role of the eyes, amplifying the desires of my heart. And so it's a fascinating thing to think about when you bring it into the real world, when there are so many advertisements that are put in front of our faces. I mean, more today than any other time in human history. Social media, which you mentioned this weekend, literally makes its money off of our attention. That's what social media sells to companies, is they say, well, we have this many users who spend this many hours a day on our platform. So if you advertise with us, it's generally going to be pretty effective because they're going to see it.
Good net.
Yeah, they're going to see it over and over and over again. It's significantly more effective than TV, which used to be the predominant place that ads, you know, had a hold on us. Now it's on your phone. You hit it through breaks throughout the day or awkward moments throughout the day. You immediately want to pull to it. And then I've noticed, like, on social feeds that I have, like, how repetitive ads get too. Like, if you hold your finger on an ad for just a second longer, they realize we caught him, he's interested. So then they just keep bringing that one back again and again and again. And this isn't like commentary to vilify social media companies. They're secular companies who are seeking to make the most money possible, and that's how they're gonna do it. This is then knowing that that's the case, as people who trust that Jesus was right about everything and we wanna take seriously what he said, then we have to get really serious about what we look at.
Yeah.
And so to me, you can't just be like, well, social media companies stink. You know, you've got to be like, okay, that's their game. I know that if I'm just continuously looking at those things and allowing the images that I intake to be pretty much curated by an algorithm, not curated by me, not curated by Christ, but by this algorithm that's just going to be coming my way, seeking to kind of convert me to sales, then I've got to be really cautious about how I engage with that, right? Like, I think it's interesting, I don't know how much you've like read about this, but the Surgeon General, the like leading doctor in America, has now released two in back-to-back years. He kind of like generally releases a report each year on the thing he's kind of most concerned about health-wise in America. last 2 years, it's been social media both times. The first time he was looking at the way it was affecting loneliness, depression, and suicidal thoughts in young kids who were getting on social media too early. And I think the idea there was maybe it's not a good idea to engage with until later in life because people are too impressionable.
Sure.
Then this time he advocated that America would pass laws that would put warnings on social medias when you download them onto your device, similar to warnings that are on the packages of like cigarettes, like containing,
could cause
consuming
harm.
This will cause harm in your life, basically, which is wild. I mean, the way he's talking about social media right now is that like my kids will be like, yeah, my dad used to smoke 12 packs a day, but I don't touch that stuff because they didn't know how bad it was for them then.
Sure.
That's almost how he's talking about social media.
We don't understand the implications.
We don't understand the way it's affecting us, but there's going to continue to be science and research and study on the negative effects of it. And you've got a generation who's addicted to it. And so that's been a fascinating between, you know, obviously first taking in Christ's teaching and the Bible's teaching about being really cautious about the things that you allow to intake into your life and realizing when I hop on social media, I don't have any control over what they bring towards me. That's made me really cautious about how I engage with it. So not to like lay out a law, this is just like, this has been what's been really helpful for Jackson. The solution there for me has been I need to get all that junk off my phone. It's not good for me to have quick access and easy, like impulsive access to it. It's not good for my relationships even. Like I said, we have a really bad habit of like, anytime there's a slow lull in the day, we just grab for our phones. And so needs to get off of my phone. And where I do engage with it, because I still think it's helpful to be in that space, I keep it all on my iPad, which is a much more awkward and clunky device to look at it on. So I can only be on it for so long because it's not even built for my iPad. So it doesn't feel quite as natural. So it shortens the time in which I'm on it and I have to be intentional. Like, oh, I've got to choose to go grab my iPad out of my bag so that I can be on it. And so I put it on a secondary device basically that's a little bit more awkward and uncomfortable for me to try to be intentional with what I'm consuming there and how much time I'm giving it. So that's the way I've gotten super practical about what I'm allowing in. Are there things or practices you've done in the past or recently that have been thoughtful about the way that you allow things to be intaken, whether social media or otherwise?
Yeah. A couple of things, even on just real quick on the social media. One thing I'm working on, back to you, you mentioned about the lulls in our day. I'm trying now to not just whip out my phone when I'm in a line somewhere, but just to be present, because what's happening is, and again, these are small things. We're not trying to make legalistic laws, but we are talking about our eyes. And we're talking about, in this case, being present. Because what I've found is if I'm just waiting in a line, I pull up my phone, I don't have a clue what's going on around me. And more importantly, I don't have a clue of who is around me and opportunities that there might be just to connect with someone, to encourage someone, to be attentive to the needs that they have. I'm completely checked out. I'm not doing anything wrong, but I'm not surely doing anything right.
Yeah.
So that's just
not
been
present.
Practical thing. Yeah. This is the goal to be more present has been something I'm taking to heart. The other thing is, when I think it's this connection, I was thinking about it this last week in different areas of my life. At times, I remember reminding myself and others to take sticky notes and to write on them, it's going to burn, and just be able to put it on things that I'm valuing and just realize it can be used in a helpful, meaningful way of even what it was intended, but it should never be an idol. I should never be tethered to this. So remind myself. And then the other part is being able to look at things and appreciate their worth and their beauty, but not almost having to kind of intentionally disconnect my soul from the fact I need to possess them. Like I can appreciate beautiful scenery, and I can appreciate even watching a nice car drive down the road, but not be like, how do I get one of those?
Or I don't need to own a home here.
I just need to be someone who goes, I can appreciate those things that have, you know, even in our own maybe subculture, unique value, but not being like, but I need one. And I think that's the connect. That's the bridge that we need to drop out of, is being able to see something and then not jump to how do I possess that?
Yeah.
But more like, no, I can appreciate that. And that's a cool thing, or that helps that person out anyway, or just look at God's beauty and creation.
It's
and
cool. I get to be here today.
Yeah, I get to look at it. So I think, again, it's trying to train our eyes back to that passage in Philippians 4 to look upon things that have this nobility and have this beauty and this worth, but not turn the corner into either A, completely avoiding those things and letting those eyes become present darkness to my whole body of what I'm now becoming covetous or lusting after. But then on top of that, being able to go, God, I can look upon things and not feel like I need to own them.
Yeah.
And because I don't own anything. I'm a manager of it all. And that's just been healthy to make that disconnect in my spirit.
Yeah. No, that's so good. And I think, you know, another one as we're talking that I was thinking about is my wife's been talking to me a lot about her trying to be more intentional about the time she spends. She's so good at like not spending money frivolously, but she spends a lot of time looking at items online shopping, not buying them, but just looking at kind of almost, and I think I've totally related to this when she was talking to me about it. I can kind of have this approach in life of like, I never want to be short of a wish list. So I want to make sure I keep filling out my wish list. What are the things? Oh, I've gotten that. So that comes off the wish list. What am I going to add to it? And so it becomes this thing that can really fuel, even if we don't act on it impulsively all the time, it can fuel a lot of greed in our lives, where it's like we come to just be filling out over and over. Well, I want this and I want this and I want this. And as we do that, man, it can create a lot, again, amplifying in our hearts a lot of problems there in greed. And I think what could be difficult for people as we're talking about this is we're talking about a lot of things to stop doing, to not be looking at online shopping as frequently, to not be on social media as frequently, to be more cautious, maybe even for some of us about the podcasts we listen to or the shows we watch or things like that, that maybe would present before us things that create and generate a want and desire and I need that X, Y, or Z. And so as we're talking about that though, the Bible's instructions are never just don't do this. It's always do this instead, because the Bible isn't focused on don't have fun. The Bible is focused on don't do this. It leads to death. Do this. It leads to life.
Yeah.
Right. So Jesus was right about everything. This is bad. He's correct about that, but he also knows what's better. And so when we talk about having simple vision, having healthy eyes, what are practices that we could engage in? You know, I love your, like, I can look at this and appreciate it and I don't need to possess it. What are other things that we could do that as we're disengaging from this, we could replace with something else?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, like you mentioned earlier today, the shred, any time that I will begin to prioritize the Word of God in my life, I say that weirdly because I feel like it's seasonal for most people. Very few people that I meet have the discipline and the rhythm of pretty much daily or at least five times a week being in God's word in some devotional manner. And things like the shred are trying to help people go, man, if you could do this for 30 days, you could probably spend 15 minutes with the Lord daily. If you're doing an hour and 45 for 30 days, you could do that. So it's a great way to kind of build that muscle. Like, this is a realistic thing I can maintain.
Yeah.
But I feel like what happens with the Word of God, it is back to, through my eyes, amplifying my affections. Mm. And so in this case, what am I looking at? What am I looking for? And this has been fascinating. I remember taking a class in seminary from a guy who's a missionary who planted churches all over South and Central America. And I just remember him saying, if you look for God on mission in the former covenant in the Old Testament, you'll find it all over the place. And I just remember one time in a year reading my Bible through, I just started looking. I have a red pen in this Bible that has different places where I underlined, oh, that's that.
Yeah. You
know, that's it. All these words about for the nations, or even oddly in some prophets, the islands. And I'm like, it's everywhere. It is everywhere. It's not even something he's making up or something. I'm like, if I will read looking for something, I'll find it. Mm. And so, for instance, if you are bogged down with materialism and really having a hard time separating yourself from either the desire for more or that what you do have is going to be satisfying. Now go back and read God's word and see Solomon say, man, that ain't going to last.
Yeah.
Read in the Psalms where it talks about that, apart from you, God, I have no good thing. Read that God doesn't withhold anything from those who love him. As I start looking for these verses that amplify an affection of both the reliance on God, but also a contentment with what he's given me to manage and trusted in me, I'm going to find it. And that's where I just go, man, making that a part of my daily rhythm. If I'm going, I'm not seeing this right. I'm treasuring the wrong things. Like you said, how do you stop? Just stop treasuring them.
Yeah.
Well, you need to pull back, but you also need to engage, disengage, engage. And I think engaging in the word of God might even be engaging with other believers who, as you're interacting with them, like in your growth group or in a rooted group or just folks you've known for a long time that you've admired, how have you cultivated generosity? Hmm. How have you cultivated not being tethered to your things, because I'm struggling. That's kind of defines me in a lot of ways. Man, there's helpful ways, helpful people to come up along next to, and then to hear them and what God has done in their lives to, again, free them, untether them from things of this earth.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's such a good, you know, like when you think about the benefit of following Jesus in this teaching, some of the benefit actually comes from living a life that has a greater degree of simplicity to it, because there is a there is cost beyond money to owning things. There is time involved in the things that we own. When you own a second home, that is another thing that you need to take care of. That is another thing, not that it's evil to own a second home, but that's a for instance, right? Same as when you own a jet ski or a boat or an off-roading toy or whatever. When you own those things, time comes with that. And when you continue to add to that list of things that you own, you have so many things that need your attention and need constant care. That then leads to you being significantly more preoccupied with your things, right? And so that is not a life that, right, you read this weekend, life is not found in an abundance of possessions. And that is not just like, hey, you're not gonna find it there, but also like, you're gonna get so bogged down. Like a lack of enjoyment is found in an abundance of possessions.
It rocks in the pockets.
Yeah.
You know, down by your ankles.
It gets exhausting, right? And so I think there is though there is not, like you said this weekend again, I think, there is not a Christian command or instruction to a poverty or a vow of poverty. But I do think there is a biblical value of simplicity that says, I am okay and know that life will be better if I live not at my means, but actually under my means. Mm-hmm. And living under my means, there is greater joy to be found there, because there is less stuff that I own, meaning that there is less that demands my time and attention. And it frees me up to be generous, which is the, you know, Jesus doesn't really talk about it here in this moment of teaching, but that's in many ways the heartbeat and the why. I mean, you do have the issue of your heart is going to drift from God. So that's a huge reason why to disengage from this. But the why for the benefit is now you get to be generous.
Yeah.
So don't do this because it's going to take your heart away from God. So don't look at things that are going to continually stir you towards things away from God and amplify your desires for material things. Don't look at those things. Look with a simplistic vision, with a simple vision, and then you get to live generously. And that is the good life. That's the benefit of getting to follow Jesus's instruction here, because now, like you said, related to your phone, first, you've got the time to be attentive to other people because you don't have so many things that keep you like, well, I've got this that needs, I got to redo the tags on the boat and I've got to, you know, like it just gets like out of hand how much time needs to go to the things that we come to possess. So when we live simplistically, now I have time for other people to like pull my head up for a second and say, oh, wait, I have a neighbor and they're going through a hard season right now. And because I've been living under my means, I could be helpful to them. And the reason why that is the best way to live and the most enjoyable way to live is because it's the way that God lives.
Yeah.
And so we've been designed in his image. This is the great opportunity that we have to get to be generous like he is generous. Mm-hmm. And when he, great quote that I heard on a John Mark Comer podcast that wasn't from him, it was somebody else he was quoting, but he said, God doesn't give us more to increase our standard of living, but to increase our standard of giving. I thought, and it's again, not because God wants to keep bad things from us or good things from us. He is trying to lead us into the good life, which is to give and to give generously. And that's the most enjoyable way to live.
Yeah.
And so if you're so racked with debt or you're so caught up with all of the time and attention that all of your things need and you keep maxing out, maybe not over exceeding your means, but you're right at it, it doesn't give you the margin of time or money to be able to be generous with the people around you. Yeah. And so don't miss that. You're missing out. Like that's that side that we talked about at the beginning. You are missing out on the enjoyable way to live.
Yeah, so true. And you know, what if we would all embrace what God said to Abraham way back in Genesis? I'm going to bless you so you can be a blessing to literally the whole world. And so, yeah, if we would see things through that lens, because even for someone maybe not living in that kind of ongoing dependence upon the Lord, you feel pretty self-sufficient and whatever. And there will be things that come into your life financially. You're like, where'd that come from? I was named in some class action suit as a benefit and I get this check or whatever. You know, this weird stuff happens, I think, a lot of us. And when those come into my life, I'm being uniquely blessed in that moment. How often I will just add it up to, well, now I can get this. I'm just going to keep accumulating versus, but man, now I have an opportunity. And I think for people who really struggle with the gods of materialism, they look at people who are generous and just, they look so weird. Like, why would you get such great joy out of giving stuff away? Like, how could you, because it just makes sense. That is their, we use that phrase, every person has their own stairway into hell. That is their temptation.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult to go, why would you not just want to accumulate for yourself? Why would you ever want to give that away? And that's so contrary to the character of God.
Yeah.
Who, when we say God is love, another way we're saying is God is giving.
Yeah.
God is generous. He shows not just emotion, but action for our good. So it is a powerful thing, but it is a powerful thing to miss out on when you're consumed by things for you.
And materialism and greed, you know, Jesus says elsewhere, watch out for greed,
watch out.
Right? It's gonna take you. And I think those can be the kind of sneaky sins in the church where they don't fall into the, you know, nasty nine or, you know, the evil 11 or whatever. They end up becoming these things that are kind of outside issues or secondary issues. And, because churches probably don't talk about money very often because there's something awkward about talking about money, knowing that the church runs on the giving and generosity of other people. It's hard for people to separate, both for pastors and for those listening, the instructions of Jesus being just a good way to live for their good. And then also, but also like literally to keep running, we do need your money, right? So it's that's a difficult conversation.
Sure.
And I think because of that, you've got a teaching void, right? That generally happens. And in that, these areas of greed and materialism can go largely unchecked in our lives. And so this is a great opportunity as we come to the teaching of Jesus to say, separate from talking about your tithing or things like that, this is going to eat you for lunch. This is not for your good. It is going to bring darkness into your life and it's going to rob your life of joy. And so it is not for your good to continue life. The good life is not found in abundance of possessions. And so free yourself, unburden yourself from the pursuit of wealth and more stuff and find true life in being able to give generously and live simply, because that is where the good life is found.
Yeah. Amen.
Well, thank you for this. This has
You're
been
welcome.
Fun.
Yeah. Love it. And love that we're getting to even download more than we could on the weekend to talk through these really important issues of stewardship.
Yeah. Totally. No, it's been good. And I hope that, you know, this series has been beneficial to you so far. And we'd love to hear what you're taking away from the previous couple weekends' message. And we've got Pastor Tom coming this weekend to continue on in our series and finish off this portion of our series.
Yeah.
So it'll be good this weekend too. But that's all we have for this week. We'll catch you guys next week on Tangible Takeaways.